commitment to democracy and freedom, with his ennobling ideas about forgiveness, reconciliation, and an ideal society he called the beloved community. Finding the answers to these questions must begin with gaining a historical perspective on his identity as an African-American born in Alabama in the mid-20th century. Just below the surface of Lewis's iconic public persona was a living, breathing human being, a man descended from generations of men and women who endured the horrors of slavery and its aftermath. Both the text and context of his life, public as well as private, emerged from a litany of historical injustices born of a racial dilemma that has long lain at the heart of the American experiment. The rise of a mass movement intent on challenging this dark reality is the broad story I want to tell. But fully understanding Lewis's part in it, how he helped to create a movement that altered the trajectory of the civil rights struggle, will require much exploration and careful deliberation. Maintaining a healthy level of scholarly detachment is always a challenge when writing about an admirable figure like Lewis. But it is especially difficult when the author both knows the subject personally and shares many of his beliefs. This is the situation I faced as I strove to maintain a critical edge that fostered a balanced view of Lewis's life. My intention throughout has been to avoid hagiography and hero worship, telling Lewis's full story with all of its ups and downs intact. The result, I hope, is a realistic and nuanced interpretation of one of the most intriguing figures of our time. I first met Lewis during the fall of 2000 in his Washington congressional office, a comfortable but cluttered room filled with books, historical photographs, and civil rights memorabilia. Though excited, I didn't know quite what to expect. As a veteran historian of the civil rights movement, I already knew about the basis of his fame, about his bravery as a freedom writer in 1961, his speech at the March on Washington in 1963, and his courageous march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, 2 years later. But I wondered what it would be like as a human being. Would he be gracious and generous with his time, giving me the full hour-long interview I had requested? Or would he be cold and formal, perhaps even dismissive? The answer came almost immediately as the congressman smiled and extended his hand, asking me politely why I wanted to write a book about the Freedom Rides. Over the next hour, his warmth and openness washed over me, putting me completely at ease. He not only answered all of my questions, many of which had undoubtedly been asked hundreds of times in the past, he also assured me that he genuinely valued truth-telling history, that he wanted to see the true story of the Freedom Rides shared with as much of the world as possible. As he once explained, he believed it is imperative to study and learn the lessons of history because humanity has been involved in this soul-wrenching existential struggle for a very long time. I knew, of course, that in 1998, he had published a highly acclaimed autobiography, Walking with the Wind, a memoir of the movement, for which he later received the 2006 Roosevelt Wilson Award, presented by the American Historical Association to recognize public service to the discipline of history. The interview went well, and before we had finished, he even recruited me to help him contact the hundreds of freedom riders he wanted to invite to an upcoming 40th reunion, to which I was also invited. By the time I left his office, we had become friends, drawn together by both emotional and intellectual ties. This began a 20-year friendship, a gift that afforded me numerous opportunities to observe him up close and personal. The more I saw of him, the more I came to appreciate his depth and character. He was, without a doubt, a man of uncommon decency and almost breathtaking moral courage. Not only did he live up to his reputation for greatness, but he did so with a hint of pretense or self-absorption. Early on, when I made the mistake of addressing him as Congressman Lewis, he waved me off with a gentle admonition. "Just call me John. Everyone does." There was quite a shyness about him that magnified his charm. To my surprise, he had a soft conversational voice that contrasted with the soaring oratory he often displayed in the public arena. He also had a slight but noticeable speech impediment that, combined with a thick southern drawl, gave him an air of vulnerability.